Morning to all honorable members, our staff, stakeholders.
Recording in progress.
I've noticed Deputy Commissioner Love and Commissioner Mieta and other interested parties to this session. We are continuing with the briefing session. As you recall, we have last week received a brief meeting or a brief presentation by Parliamentary Legal Service on the process or issues that they've recorded on our public hearings, oral and written submissions, which they were focusing on legal perimeters around the amendment of the electoral amendment. They did not deal or focus on the policy option, which is the responsibility of the committee once all the issues have been raised to our attention. The content advisor with a team of researchers from committees collated information which were submitted to the committee, and we've invited Mr. Salmon to come and present the issues that are around emanating from the public hearings for the committee and the stakeholders to note for information as we'll be going to deliberate on the issues. We will able to have a fair share of responses on the issues that will be arising as we're going for a last response session on Friday with the IEC, and not responses by comments on the issues that arise from the electoral amendment bill and the consultation we've engaged on, and also Home Affairs. Secondly, the agenda as outlined, it will the either Mr. Matonzi or Mr. Salmon will table the report of the process which was engaged on by the Chief Justice, which in relation to the vacancy at the IEC, as you all know, that Commissioner Mashinini, who was the chairperson then, his term has ended. They will table the report and will then establish a process forward once this report has been tabled by the team of researchers. We're going to our meeting. I don't think will be longer today. Mr. Matonzi, I'm going to invite you to take the item number 2. Apologies if there are any apologies to be noted by the meeting.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. There are no apologies that I have received so far. Thanks, Chairperson.
And the stakeholders that you might have invited?
No, I haven't received any apologies.
Okay. I think one matter which we also note, Mr. that Honorable Ramulo Beng, she also serves in the Justice Portfolio Committee. You'll notice that on Fridays that she's not attending some of our committee meetings is because she's an alternative in our committee and she's a full time on that other committee. So Justice meet on Friday. So she's jangling around the meeting of Home Affairs. I think we must just note that formally that the apology, particularly in our meetings on Friday. Mr. Salmon, you're invited to brief the meeting. Thank you very much.
Good morning, honorable members, our guests and colleagues. I will continue the submission on the provincial and national public hearings. focusing on the written and oral submissions. Since the researcher already covered much of the provincial hearings, the focus will be today more on the written and oral submissions. So in total, there were 107 written submissions, of which 40 were substantial, so more than one page, and going up to 62 pages. And within that, there were also 13 organizations that made oral presentations based on their written submissions. So the members were already familiar with those who made the oral submissions, and they are now in this report grouped together with the written submissions because they're all largely dealing with the same content. So I've dealt with these according to the main sections that they dealt with, of which there are five or six sections in the bill that the organizations primarily focused on. So I've just highlighted in bold some of the key aspects of those submissions, and I'll briefly go through them. Firstly, on the preamble of the bill, Vali Musa, who's part of the Ministerial Advisory Committee on electoral reform, indicated that generally related to the bill, that it must be seen by the public to be fair and must be easily understood. And so he felt that the new system, because it's complicated, more complicated, would require significant increased voter education. He also felt that the principle of equal value of votes is not upheld because of the discarding of surplus votes of independent candidates. He also emphasized that in none of the participants submitting on during the Ministerial Advisory Committee process, whether public, academic, civil organization, or political party, had proposed the system that's currently in the bill. And also that the process followed is as important as the final provisions, and hence the need for extensive public participation and consultation. The National Elders Council indicated that a year and a half has passed without significant evidence of implementation, and this undermines the Constitutional Court ruling. The African School of Governance and AUSA failed, also agreed that there was a failure to meet the Constitutional Court, but in relation to the principles of fairness, inclusivity, transparency, openness, and accountability, and that there wasn't sufficient public participation in the drafting, and in addition that there's unnecessary barriers to independent candidates, and that they propose following the British system where all candidates submit nominations individually, whether they're from a political party or an independent. So there's no distinction between political parties and independent candidates. Then moving on to clause one and the definitions, there were several submissions, or at least two, on by Professor Dirk Kotze and the F.W. de Klerk Foundation, indicating that region defined as a territorial area or province could cause confusion, and that because they're naming a province and a region the same thing could be confusing, and they should rather replace regional seats with national constituency seats, which makes it clear that this is that there are distinctions between provinces and regions. And also, the objection was that the nine huge National Assembly constituencies or provinces goes against most of the proposals, such as the Ministerial Panel and the Van Zyl-Slabbert report, that propose more constituencies. And the reason being that it's very difficult to campaign effectively, particularly for independent candidates who don't have the same financial and other resources. And thus there's an inherent bias in favor of political parties. Then clause four, which deals with the submission of lists of candidates and declarations signed by candidates. The submission from the National Elders Council is that community civic organization and independent candidates have in the past been refused funding and essentially become appendages of well-resourced political parties. Their argument here essentially is that their argument, of course, their submission is for the recognition of non-partisan civic organizations such as community organizations, not as political parties, but as other organizations should be allowed to run. And with the current situation of corruption and factional battles within political parties, if these are not addressed, independent candidates will, their inclusion will be a failed exercise. And they intend to argue for the full equal rights of independent and collective candidates, both individually and collectively, to make choices such that voters can nominate, vote, deploy, and recall any constituency independent candidates, whether political party or otherwise. And also, again, they're arguing for the non-partisan citizen associations, community assemblies, councils, and citizen parliament be included as, be allowed to run as for elections, and not as political party or independent candidates. This could include formal names of villages, farms, townships, wards, municipalities, districts, provinces, etc. So they are arguing for more than just the two categories of party or independent. And merely requiring as membership of those civic organizations that they their members be residing or existing in those demarcated areas. And then essentially arguing for the full rights of those civic organizations to participate in policy formulation over and above their inclusion in getting seats and being nominated. They also refer specifically to Subject 31B on the and relating to sections 95 and 107 of the Constitution, requiring oath, so that public representatives should be accountable to citizens, communities, and the Constitution of South Africa in their oath, and that there be processes enacted to allow the voters to take to court public representatives who are deemed to be violating this oath of office. Moving on then to Clause 5, specifically Section 57 of the Act, provides for a system of representation in the NA and provincial legislatures, including a list of candidates and independent candidates. The First Nation advocacy, again, against the wasted votes perceived to be part of the minimalist option, and that there should be mechanisms to replace the independent candidates. They don't propose a solution, but there are other submissions that do. Citizens Parliament argue that the changes to the Act are merely cosmetic and do not address the issues raised by the Concord. And they should reflect equal opportunity for citizens to stand and hold office. They therefore reject Clause 5 and propose that the representation be rather 75% of seats at legislatures reserved for independent candidates and 25% for proportional representation as per the Fonseca Flubbert report, as opposed to the 50-50% proposed in the bill. Clause 8, dealing with Section 106 of the Electoral Act, dealing primarily with deposits. Here, the National Elders Council felt that they should do away with the monetary qualification, since this could encourage or continue corruption and bribery in the political and private sector. And therefore that merely a list of support should be sufficient qualification criteria. Citizen Parliament agreeing with that and proposing that also that voter support signatures would be sufficient. The Institute for Race Relations and F.W. de Klerk Foundation felt that although a deposit is required, the level should be lower at a municipal level of around over 1,000 rand and provincial and provincial and parliament level between 5,000 and 10,000 rand to prevent unfair discrimination against formerly disadvantaged representatives. Clause 11, which is the main part of the bill and for which they offered also the significant amount of submissions, dealing with the actual process for appointing seats in the National Assembly, including independent candidates. The New Nation Movement propose that there be that the 52 district municipalities become 52 multi-member constituencies. Again, that there also should be a 75-25% split in favor of independent candidates, and that voters should have the power to recall constituency elected representatives should they choose to do so, and that these direct representatives should be funded by the IEC. Professor de Kotzer basically saying again that the division of 200 PR versus provincial, 200 PR versus national split is and doesn't promote accountability. With the last constituencies such as KZN and Gauteng, where there are several million voters, doesn't really improve access for our voters to their parliamentarians. A bunch of different organizations, including AfriForum, Freedom Advocacy Network, FW de Klerk, Independent Candidates Association, Advocate Ebenezer Profi, Dorothy Corsi, and Raising Rights as Rulers, believe that independent candidates not being able to be allocated more than one seat, even where they have sufficient votes to vote to justify this, is unfair. And that we cannot lose sight of what voters expect, and that wasted, lost, or surplus votes do not accomplish this and therefore go against the expectations of voters. And essentially that independent candidates are required to participate in the same way the political parties are, whilst not being able to translate their support into equivalent seats or legislative representation. And that this is unfair and discriminatory, and that the bill does not take into account the votes cast by independent candidates when determining the proportional representation. The compensatory seats therefore do not enact as a way of ensuring proportionality as they do at the local government election. Single seat for an independent candidate who receives more votes than a political party cannot be said to be proportional. Citizens Parliament also against the principle of wasted votes, and that independent candidates should count in favor of constituency independence to the end of counting, to the end of the counting process without any discarding. And then several organizations, again, the Independent Candidate Association, an advocate Ebenezer Profi, and a bunch of Force of Change, feeling that the limitation of independent candidates to 200 seats disadvantages them, and they should be allowed to contest all 400 seats, and the droop system should be applied across all three rounds of vote counting. Otherwise, it disadvantages independent candidates more than political parties. And as a result, the seat share of political parties was inflated because they were allowed to count their surplus votes, and as compared to independent candidates, and thus there would not be result in proportional representation. In turn, the lack of being able to have equal voting power and influence for independent candidates means that they could hypothetically receive 550,000 votes, of which 500,000 would be surplus or wasted, and therefore not translate into their representation. They also refer to the minority dissenting judgment in the New Nation movement by Judge Frohman, where he referred to the never again impulse in Section 19 that citizens should not be disenfranchised, and that some people's votes should count more than others, which effectively they're saying is what happens in the current proposed bill. The National Elders Council, referring to the Constitution, in particular Section 19(1)(c), to campaign for a political party or cause, the current act, they indicate, is unconstitutional in that there's no provision for voters to choose the president or other political office bearers. We'll also likely see the electorate directly electing their own president, other executive public office bearers, in support of independent candidates at a provincial and national level. And also 19(3)(b) of the Constitution, that everyone should be able to stand for public office, including the president, deputy president, and executive public officers at provincial and national levels, which they argue is not allowed for in the current bill. AfriForum and Freedom Advocacy Network indicate that the current model is detrimental to simplicity, effectiveness, legitimacy, and fairness. Including the increase in calculation, application of formula, and the potential permutations arising. It's not sufficiently simple to grasp and explain. And also that the wasted and inefficient votes looming over the voter require far more engagement and critical reasoning and analysis. This would also result in tactical voting, since voters would know that independent candidates would have more likely have their votes not be counted and would only allow in one seat, and thus would choose to vote for a party rather than an independent candidate, again, giving an unfair advantage. Again, then several organizations, One South African Movement, Lynette Moody, Pastor Prince Soga, Mandela Bay Unity Movement, Nwata Residents Association, and Moratela Independent Civil Organization argue that Parliament should go the further mile to change the electoral system to save it having to go to court again later, or since the ruling is not properly addressed by the current bill. They promote the quarter bill or the independent or the private members bill system, where the use of transfer of votes would prevent the wastage of votes and the related disincentivizing of people from voting, and also allowing independent candidates to contest in all 400 seats, and also ensuring that vacancies are filled, otherwise depriving the representation of voters. They also indicate that there's no provision for the condonation or of a waiver of either the signature or the deposit requirements, but there should be special requirements, special conditions to prevent discrimination of formerly disadvantaged groups. And it is unfair that independent candidates are required to show signatures, whereas political party candidates are not required to show such signatures. In addition, that the independent candidates don't have the financial and organizational support and thus are at a structural disadvantage. And they also argued in favour of the private members' bill being included as part of the public hearings. Alta, they're arguing that a candidate should have to submit his or her name as a primary candidate and then submit a list of secondary candidates as a way of ensuring that votes are not wasted, and that this is supported by Section 18 of the Constitution, which is in favour of the right to associate. Also supporting the private members' bill for the transfer of votes. AfriForum and the Institute for Race Relations, and arguing that the new system is novel and more complex and would further discourage voters, and that such a radical change must be proportionally advantageous and desirable, which the current bill, they argue, is not. AfriForum, Institute for Race Relations, First Nation Advocacy, South Africa, and New Nations Movement, Botswana Force of Change, argue in favor of a single transferable vote, which, although complex, retains a link between the constituency and the representative. Candidates in a multi-member constituency are ranked. The system is used in Australia, Malta, Scotland and Ireland. So each candidate must still meet the quota, but then the further votes are, instead of being lost, for the votes are transferred to the voter's next favored candidate, allowing those votes to not be baited and wasted. 70s Group, the South African Council of Churches and the Institute of Race Relations, are calling for, again, for the multi-member, merely listing the advantages and disadvantages of the closed list and open list systems. These are, again, I think highlighted last time by the researcher, but also in the response by the Department of Affairs. There's also an indication of the relative proportionality, connectedness, and voter choice of the various systems being proposed. So it's a more technical indication of exactly what system achieves what a desired outcome. And lastly, that the single transferable vote achieves top rankings in connectedness and voter choice. And it is the one system adjudicated to treat independent candidates equitably. So essentially they are arguing in favor of the single transferable vote. Since this allows the votes cast to carry equal weight, and the proportionality is at a party or association level, and independent candidates grouping would allow for them to be included in that proportional calculation. And that essentially voting should occur at a group level, shouldn't occur at a group level, and all voting, whether for independents or parties, should occur at an individual level. And that's allowing for seats to be owned by persons and all seats requiring by elections. Michael Atkins arguing that proportional representation excludes the notion of individuals. Individual representation can be included by separate elections, balanced by compensatory seats to achieve overall proportionality. And that independent candidates face a significantly higher burden to secure elections to the National Assembly and provincial legislatures, but also the largest political parties benefit substantially at the expense of smaller political parties. That this is mathematically verifiable, and that the bill distorts seat allocation in both the national and provincial legislatures, and places clear hurdles on the part of independent candidates. distorting representation in a manner that advantages larger political parties at the expense of smaller parties. This submission including like various examples of how the formula or the current bill makes these disadvantages or provides for these disadvantages. The indication that it's a slightly modified multi-member constituency system in the bill is misleading, because there's no system in use where such multi-member constituencies could include as many seats as are envisaged with the regions or provinces. They do so in the context of far fewer seats, where the distorting effect of blending individual representation and proportional representations are highly constrained. And so aside from violating the specific constitutional mandate on proportional representation, the system proposed in the bill raises other constitutional questions by placing unnatural barriers in the place of independent candidates. The submission from Kansatu is essentially in support of the bill and in that it addresses flaws in the existing legislative and governance systems, and that it does in fact meet the constitutional court judgment, and that it provides for minimal disruptions, since it is largely similar to the systems already in place, and that there are dangers of a constituency-based system, since few residents know who their ward councillors are, and that they will abuse their power. Professor Doug Kutzer, FW de Klerk, and Dari Corso indicate that the court specifically excluded the local government system as an option for the amendment, and thus that the bill being based on this is not adequate. They then provide an example of how the current calculation system in the bill would not support Section 19 of the Constitution. The 70s Group National Elders Council therefore proposed that multi-member constituencies, as per the Fonsale Slabbert report, and again the 75-25% split. The Institute for Race Relations and Freedom Advocacy Network, in contrast, argue for an open list system, which instead of endorsing the party slate would select individuals that they would like to represent them in parliament. The Institute for Race Relations and FW de Klerk Foundation, again, I think this numbering, enumerating the advantages and disadvantages of the different systems without proposing any particular solution. Essentially also, but supporting the research done by the Fonsale Slabbert report. The Inclusive Society Institute are in favor of 300 candidates representing 66 multi-member constituencies, between 3 and 7 members per multi-member constituency. And the Independent Candidates Association, again, submitting that independent candidates should be able to stand for all 400 seats. The FW de Klerk Foundation and Independent Candidates Association, delineating all the different processes that have gone through in consulting on the electoral form in the country from 2003 onwards, and describing, as members will be familiar, the high-level panel process, and the Ministerial Advisory Committee in particular, and essentially supporting the majority or first option, which would allow candidates to represent, independent candidates to represent at all, for all 400 seats. Then the 70s group argue in favor of balancing the advantages and disadvantages of 100% proportional representation in the constituency system. So parties will nominate candidates in each multi-member constituency to cover 75% again, and that local party branches in each multi-member constituency will result in their own candidates for each seat in that constituency in consultation with party headquarters. And party headquarters will then appoint the 25% or 100 National Assembly seats on the same basis as at present. And similarly, supported by the FW Clark Foundation, indicating there that they should be 250 to 300 single member constituencies and 100 to 150 representatives elected on a compensatory proportional system. Professor Dorcutzer, referring to Schedule 1A, subclause 6, and indicating that the complicated formula for the allocation of seats would disincentivize voter participation. And then the Council for the Advancement of South African Constitution, CASEC, arguing that that the current electoral system and bill do not encourage sufficient accountability and fairness, and that a single member constituency system as opposed to the multi-member constituency system should be adopted, since the multi-member diffuses accountability and of electoral officials and their constituencies. To prevent the disadvantaging of the advantaging of political parties over other of independent candidates. Then, in relation to the memorandum, the AfriForum, Ebenezer Profi, and on behalf of One South Africa, again, speaking against the system where candidates receiving a significant amount of votes would not have these translated into sufficient amount of seats. The Freedom Advocacy Network, that the bill and the memo failed to address the consequential contradictions that have not been identified. Should the bill proceed in its current wording, current constitutional amendment of Section 47 and 106 would be required, because it makes retention of party membership a prerequisite for security of tenure and continuing parliamentary career. In that a person who loses membership of the National Assembly, if they cease to be eligible, are absent without permission, or cease to be a member of a political party. Relating to membership and eligibility in provincial level, Section 106 states that a person loses membership of a provincial legislature, that person ceases to be eligible, is absent, or ceases to be a member of the political party. Should the bill be adopted, these sections would need to be amended through constitutional amendment. This, however, is concerning not discussed in the memo. Then general submissions from the Inclusive Society and AfriForum indicate that national provincial legislators may, as a consequence of the judgment, have to rethink how they function now that independent candidates take up seats. The rules and procedures of the legislature may require amendments as may constitutional provisions providing for minority party participation in the business of legislatures, which would have to be expanded since the current system is based on the party system. First Nation advocacy opposes the bill in its entirety, in that it does not cater for independent candidates to participate in the National Council of Provinces, and that this should be corrected. Zola Nizanyane objected to the bill in that it makes political parties superior to independent candidates, and that after 18 months, the bill had still not been introduced or has still not been finalized. That Parliament has therefore failed to ensure effective participatory democracy. The Gauteng provincial legislature, and this is also dealt by the legal section last week, are arguing that the Section 114 of the Electoral Act refers to the formulas for the determination of a number of seats provincial legislatures and alludes to Schedule 3, which indicates that the number of seats of a provincial legislature must be determined by awarding one seat for every 100,000 of the population, whose ordinary place is resident in the province, with a maximum of 50 and a minimum of 50 and a maximum of 80 seats. That the at the time of enactment of the Electoral Act in March 1999, the Gauteng province was allocated 73 members. Currently, the Gauteng province population is above 14 million, and therefore be allowed the maximum representation of 80 seats. So they're basically just arguing that more seats should be allocated to the provinces with higher population, and that this isn't included in the bill, but neither is it intended to be as part of the Constitutional Court ruling. So it's a more general submission. The National Elders Council, again, I think this is just a general, their general submission that other than political parties, there should also be, and independent candidates, there should be citizen community and community organization representation allowed to participate within the political contestation of seats. And that there should be an overall electoral reform, as well as a referendum to assess how whether one should include these independent candidates and how extensive the electoral reform needed to be. It's arguing that the internal current political system of internal factional battles and the delays to the finalization of the bill, as well as the issues of land distribution and any number of issues were contributing to a lack of faith in the current system, and therefore the calling for a referendum to completely overhaul the political and electoral system. So a radical submission there. So that's the end of the written and oral submissions. The significant ones. We then have Dear South Africa, which is an online platform allowing citizens to make submissions on bills in a more easy format. Via this platform, there were 67 short submissions, and they can be summarized according to four main concerns already raised above. But essentially, firstly, that the electoral reform is too complex and could lead to electoral apathy and to less electoral participation. And it is therefore constitutionally impermissible. Secondly, that wasted votes are also constitutionally unsound. And as per the Administrative Advisory Committee, hundreds of thousands of votes could be wasted. Possibly independent candidates could get 10 times more votes than the political party and rewarded with only one legislative seat, and that this is mathematically illogical. Thirdly, that all votes are not considered equal and the voting power of each vote is no longer equal, and that the Concord ruling specifically referred to never again that some people's voices should count more than others. Fourthly, that the bill fails to address the need for accountability and responsive legislatures, and that South Africa is already generally disenchanted, and that the bill fails to give effect to the judgment in its spirit, particularly given the large size of the constituencies and the inability of voters to choose their specific representatives or the president or other representative leaders. And that it's merely an easy option to address the bill rather than a comprehensive amendment of the electoral framework. So these are the issues raised by those against the bill. And there were a number of submissions summarized in terms of those who were in support of the bill. And firstly, that that it obviously addresses the obvious need to allow for independent candidates, but that more electoral accountability and responsiveness is required. Secondly, that the allowing of independent candidates would lead to a devolution of power that is currently vested in political parties and would lead to less abuse of public power and more responsive needs to the needs of the electorate. Those in support, however, indicated the current wording of the bill is likely that independent candidates will be severely disadvantaged in the proposed system, especially large political parties being the beneficiaries. And then there's just a summary of those submissions or a listing of those submissions by province and by concern. So that's essentially the view there. Some of these issues are already addressed by the DHA in their response, however, not all. And I think we'll leave it there, Jefferson. That's the summary of the written and oral submissions, as well as the short submissions.
Thanks very much, Mr. Salmon, and your team that is working on this report. We appreciate it. We will assist the work of the committee as we move on in our deliberations. And I'm sure that some of the issues which were presented before the committee, particularly on the oral submissions, members did interacted with the stakeholders or organizations or NGOs that made these oral submissions. We may need to establish a process, and I think we're quietly aware that the both the Home Affairs and the Parliamentary Legal Service part of the responses or comments on their presentation arises from the draft responses, report that our research team has sent to for their attention. And in the main, when we are interacting with the Parliamentary Legal Service and the Home Affairs, and I'm sure with the IEC when they come again, and the Home Affairs, is on the basis of the foundation that it's laid by the research team and all the reports that we have been collating. I will ask members, because this presentation is for noting and to assist, so that is formally presented to the committee, that will assist us to interact with the deliberations in the near future when we are going to interact with the issues that have been raised here. Let me invite Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Ruos, Honorable Lizelle, Honorable Tito, and Honorable Pile. I'm sure I requested that Honorable Khwase went to vote, so I will start with her, then in that order. Honorable Khwase.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Honorable Molekwa, yes, let me start with Honorable Khwase because she's requested to leave the meeting earlier. Honorable Khwase.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, mine is just to extend a word of gratitude to the team, to Adam and the team on research for bringing up this kind of a report to the portfolio committee, and also say that I would like to say to the committee or suggest that we note the report, and then the report must be dealt with as it comes from again in the portfolio committee. But also, Chair, I would like to say to the legal team that we need at some point, I don't know if it will be possible, Chair, we need at some point to get to understand or a session with the legal team. There are some of the terminologies from the legal side on the report which one would deeply want to get into and get a clear understanding on them. But having said that, good work to Adam and the team. Thank you very much, Chair. My plea is just that maybe we need a session, even if it can be a closed session, for one to really understand the legal terminologies that appears in some of the clauses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start by appreciating the presentation as being presented, and I acknowledge the effort made in compilation of all submissions by both individual and organization. Therefore, Chairperson, I'd like to agree with Honorable Lofasi because he raised important issues, and it takes many things that I wanted to raise. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Good morning to you and good morning to the colleagues. Chairperson, we are noting the report, and with that being said, I also support the comment made by Honorable Lekhwase. As I said, before this matter comes back to the committee for us to deliberate on, let us have a session with the legal team so that we can get clarity on the issues that we need to, or the clauses that we need clarity on, so that when we come back to deliberate on the matter, we know exactly what we are deliberating on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile. Honorable Tito. Honorable Tito. Okay, Honorable Ross.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the content advisor. I think it's a really comprehensive report. And really a special thank you to each and every South African that came up and contributed to this. All these detailed contributions that really help us as a committee to deliberate on some of the tougher issues in considering this bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Co-Chair, Honorable Zen. Honorable Zen. Okay, Honorable Pile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I think firstly, I must congratulate and commend the Portfolio Committee for the hard work, and it wasn't a very easy journey. I think we must then also extend our thanks and gratitude and commend the content advisor and entire staff compliment. And I must join Honorable Lekhwase in saying that we appreciate such a concise report. Chair, having listened to legal presentations, having listened to all of the inputs and to look at this report this morning, really then just encapsulates everything that we've done and the process that has been undertaken to date. And for me, I want to also note the report for further deliberation as we proceed in terms of the processes, and to say that now we have a holistic understanding of everything. This report actually gives you everything but we also have addressed certain of the points that were raised, certain of the submissions that needed attention legally, some of the discussion, sorry, the submissions that needed discussion, and we're now placed in a better footing to be able to take the process forward. So thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to you for having led us so well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me go back to Honorable Tito and Honorable Lizette, if they are back on the line. I think they're struggling with the network. Okay. No, thanks, colleagues, for noting this report. And I think, members, for it's important that we take along each and every submission in terms of our deliberation when we're going to interface with this subject matter. And we want to thank the team that was led by Adam Salmon to compile this report. Obviously, there are some of the issues which will interact on them when we are at that space, which are emanating from the report. And if there are some of those issues that properly could not be covered on the report, we'll deliberate on them in reference to this report of the Parliamentary Legal Service and the issues that are arising from the written submissions and the oral submissions which were conducted on the 2nd, on the 1st and the 2nd of March, and the provincial public hearings. We're taking those notes, and I'm hope that there may be other issues that are reflecting on the jurisdiction of the IEC. I think which they're taking notes on those, some of the issues, Deputy Commissioner Love, and you are all commissioners who are here, and the executive team, that obviously will have to interact with them. That will assist for a proper formulation of the issues that are arising from this report, so that the committee deliberates. Secondly, we'll then, as members, proposing that we may need to have another session, closed session with the Parliamentary Legal Services, because at least they are not dealing with the policy options that the committee had to resolve on the questions that are arising. And I'm guided that they may be relating to the constitutional issues that are related to this electoral amendment bill, so that at least members are equipped with the issues that we'll be dealing with. And I think that is the summary that we need to take on this matter, and we'll then interact with the legal team. It's important that all the issues that members may need, so that you, all of you, we are fair in terms of the issues that are arising, are facing us, and that we need to deliberate, and Parliament must deliberate on this matter. So I think that is the report, Mr. Salmon. Thinks it has been noted, and issues that are related to both the Home Affairs and IEC and also Legal Service, we'll come back to them. We're not going to pass any stage without proper clarity and equipped, so that we're able to respond to the Constitutional Court judgment, and also inform the position that the committee will be taking and deliberating on in Parliament. We're stepping off this matter. Thanks very much. The next item is on the IEC vacant position. Mr. Matonzi, I'm not sure who's going to present the report. It's you or Mr. Salmon. But what I think we need to debrief is that we've reiterated in our session that the term of office of Mr. Mashinini has ended, and there was an invitation that was issued for interested parties or individuals to participate or who are interested to serve in the electoral IEC. And that process has went. There were candidates who were shortlisted, and there were interviews that were conducted. I observed interviews of all the candidates that were ran. And this report, then the Chief Justice tabled it before the Speaker, and the Speaker has referred the report to the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs. Now, this report is going to be presented just on the process and the issues. We are not going to take decisions today. It's formally presented on the issues, so members must then begin to go back and solicit views so that we come back equipped and deliberate on the candidates. The expectation is that once we have deliberated and have a candidate, that candidate will then be report presented to Parliament, and the Parliament then will submit the report to His Excellency the President to appoint or to consider to appoint the chairperson of the IEC. At this moment, we are not appointing chairperson nor the process. Parliament is only dealing with recommending a commissioner to the IEC, and that responsibility is carried by the president. Mr. Salmon, can you take us to brief and members will comment, then we'll close the item. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just airing now the letter received from the Constitutional Court to the Speaker of the National Assembly on the filling of the vacancies, as you've indicated. And the letter dated on 10th December 2021, advising that Mr. Mashinini's term of office as commissioner had come to an end, and that that there was a request for the process of filling that vacancy. And in terms of Section 6 of the Electoral Commission Act, the process that needed to be initiated was that the Speaker of the National Assembly requested Chief Justice to convene a panel, which was then done. The Chief Justice established the panel, including the chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission, the chairperson of the Commission on Gender Equality and the Public Protector. That the chairperson of the panel, acting in accordance with Section 6.4 of the Principles of Transparency and Openness, gives instructions for the publication of the notice calling for nominations, and upon receipt of the applications, the panel compiles a shortlist. The panel conducted interviews, therefore, and thereafter submitted the recommended candidates, and that the panel must submit a list of no fewer than 8 recommended candidates, and that from the list of candidates nominates the committee nominates a person that then recommended by the National Assembly by majority resolution for the appointment by the president. And following the vacancy by Mr. Mashinini, the term of office expired, and that suitable candidates were invited to submit their applications. Altogether, 48 applications were received. The panel established in terms of the Electoral Commission Act changed the charge of this responsibility with myself, the chairperson of the South African Human Rights Commission, Advocate B. Majola, the chairperson of the Commission on Gender Equality, Ms. Matabelu, and the Public Protector Advocate Mkwebane. The panel met virtually and shortlisted 12 candidates for the interviews. And fortunately, 3 of the 12 candidates subsequently withdrew, which left us with 9 candidates. The panel met on 1 April 2022 and interviewed a further 9 candidates, interviewed the further 9 candidates, bearing in mind the criteria. And we decided to submit the following 8 recommended candidates, which are submitted in no particular order. The names then listed there.
including the current commissioner, who is entitled in terms of the Electoral Commission Act to have an extension of his term of office in terms of section 7 and section 6 and 7 of the Electoral Commission Act. And that these are some of the key issues that emerged from the CVs. Mr. Justice Beke, 61-year-old male, with a degree in DPOC, LLB, and LLM from UNISA. He's currently the Director General and Office of the Premier in the Northern Cape, and is an experienced official within the IEC since the inception in 1999. And he's been involved in voter education and in several electoral processes for more than 20 years, and as an election observer and technical advisor across the continent. In his interview, Mr. Mbeka, regarding his previous proceedings brought against him by a subordinate court, Mr. Beke provided us with detailed responses to the events. He was honest and forthright in his answers and was able to demonstrate that interpersonal experience served as a learning opportunity and allowed him to grow as a mature and mature as a leader. Mr. Beke was also well prepared for the interview and demonstrated a clear understanding of the challenges within the Electoral Commission. He had well thought out proposals on how to deal with the challenges based on the previous experience in observing elections. He's well grounded and if appointed, his wealth of experience in management and governance will be an asset to the Commission. Given the opportunity, would make a good commissioner of the Electoral Commission. Advocate Geraldine Carol Chapot-Lenglo is a 65-year-old female and holds a BA in political science and an LLB. She is an admitted advocate and currently chief audit executive at the IEC. She has authored and presented various papers on political party funding and both locally and internationally. She's an experienced in working with the Commission, understands the electoral matters, which makes her a resource for the Commission. She has a clear understanding of the challenges within the Electoral Commission and also appears to be a consultative leader who believes in strategic partnerships. As Chief Audit Executive, she is familiar and understands the governance environment within the Commission, and if appointed, would make a good Commissioner for the Electoral Commission. Advocate Lambani is a 64-year-old male and holds a BProc and an LLB and an LLM, as well as another LLM in practical theology. He's a registrar of the University of Venda, has electoral experience as a result of previous relationship with the IEC and observed elections in other jurisdictions, including presidential elections in the US. Mr. Lambani's previous experience as an electoral observer allowed him to clearly articulate the challenges and provide a practical solution. He's an asset to the Commission, and should he be appointed. Ms. Maharaj is a 47-year-old female and holds a BProc and an LLB. She admitted attorney and has her own firm, and which she founded in 2001. She has qualifications in financial accounting for public entities and corporate governance. Is also an accredited mediator with the Department of Justice. Despite not having direct experience in elections, Ms. Maharaj is able to clearly identify challenges in the system and articulate possible solutions. Her experience within the legal field was clearly demonstrated in her understanding of the legal framework within the Commission in which the IEC operates. She has proven experience in strategic management. As a mediator, she would be ideally placed to deal with the disputes that arise during elections. And if appointed, would serve as a good commissioner too. Mr. Mashanini is a 61-year-old male and holds a degree in bachelor in commerce and business management with a double major in management and marketing and program management certificate from American Graduate University. He's currently the chairperson of the Electoral Commission and serves in that capacity since 2015. The recruitment process was triggered by the imminent expiry of his office as the commissioner. And he's previously served as special project advisor to President Zuma between 2012 and 2015. And from 1998 to 2001, he served as deputy chief electoral officer of the IEC. As chairperson of the commission, Mr. Mascagnini has acquired a wealth of experience, both national and provincial elections. And during his interview, was able to deal with the various issues facing the commission with clarity and confidence. This accords with his with what is to be expected from someone who has been within the electoral environment for more than two decades. He spearheaded the development of the 2020-2025 strategic plan of the commission. And if reappointed, his experience and competence would enable him to make much needed contributions to the commission to ensure its successful implementation. Dr. Mbete is a city HR female and holds a DSOC, DSOC SC and MSOC, as well as a DPhil in international relations. She is presently a senior lecturer at the University of Pretoria and director of programs for Future Elect, which delivers nonpartisan leadership development and training programs to diverse groups of ethical and innovative young leaders. During an interview, Dr. Mbete came across as a very articulate and confident person. She shared practical views on voter education and ensuring the participation of youth in elections, something which is she is very clearly passionate about. She was ambitious in her vision for the modernization of the electoral system and displayed a balanced approach, given the realities within South Africa. Dr. Mbete would bring fresh ideas to the Electoral Commission and make a good commission if appointed. Ms. Mbombu, a 55-year-old female and holds a BSOC, social science, and an LLB and an LLM in taxation. She currently holds the position of Group Executive Governance and Assurance at the Airports Company of South Africa, which has held since 2013. She was also the interim CEO of AXA, and she has corporate governance experience stemming from a position as a group company secretary, which she held at Eskom and Metropolitan. She has also served as a council member of the Cape Peninsula University of Technology. She has sound, balanced, and objective in her interview, and her governance experience and proven experience developing and implementing enterprise risk management frameworks, compliance management frameworks, policy assurance frameworks, strategies and policies to ensure efficiency in the organization she has served. She was well articulated in her capacity and for planning and execution, and she was easy to understand and practical. I believe that if she was appointed, she would make a good commissioner for the Electoral Commission. Mr. Tango, he's a 46-year-old male and holds a teacher's diploma. His experience in regulatory bodies, as he was a member of the KwaZulu-Natal Liquor Board Authority and also a member of the National Disaster Relief Board, Relief Fund Board, and has served as an independent elections observer for the 2021 and 2016 local government elections. During his interview, he came across as articulate and confident. He would bring energy and enthusiasm to the position with his passion for ensuring that youth are encouraged to participate in elections. His role as a board member in the regulatory body would stand in good stead within the commission. Although Mr. Tanku's interview revealed certain weaknesses on his part, the panel nevertheless believes he is suitable for appointment, and that is why he included him on the list. Nevertheless, the panel took the view that when compared with the other candidates, it would rank Mr. Tango last on the list. Thank you, Stephen. That's essentially the contents of the submission from the Constitutional Court. And again, the list there, the initial list of the 12 candidates, but the focus should be on the 9 represented in the summary here. Thank you. Back to you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Salmon. Members, this is a report table before us, as I've outlined, that will deliberate on the report and make recommendation on the scheduled date. I'm going just to invite members to comment if there's any comment, and then we close to this item. I'll start with the Honorable Pile, Honorable Molekwa, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Kito, Honorable Izel, and Honorable Ruos.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me so officially say that we note this report for further deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Molekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We appreciate the briefing in terms of the progress so far as the issue of IEC Commissioner's concern. We take note of the report. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Kanyile, thank you, Honorable Molekwa. Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Chairperson. We note this report. However, in your opening, I heard you saying you were observing these interviews. One would have thought that when we note this report, maybe you're also going to make some comments, because I'm really not sure if we should be discuss. You said we're going to discuss it when it comes back, which I believe when it comes back, we should also be making recommendations. But it would be unclear for us if we make recommendations without having seen the advert. I have not seen the advert. And further to that, when I'm looking at the report that is presented here before us, there's a detailed information in terms of how the applicants responded to the questions. When you look at Mr. Bekebeke, it is indicated that he was well prepared for the interview. He answered questions with confidence. Also, it is indicated that there were proceedings brought against him by a subordinate in the
interview. Can I raise a point of order?
Order is Honorable Pillay.
Chair, it's just unfortunate that as a chairperson, we've already indicated the process and all members had no objections to noting the report. Now, Honorable Kanyile is going into discussions and deliberating on submissions. I don't think it's going to be fair to any one of us because we could have all been making input. We've agreed we are noting and discussions should then be deferred to when the report comes back, Chair.
Order sustained.
Chairperson, thank you. These are clarity seeking questions. I have a report in front of me that I need a clarity on, as I have indicated that on some of the candidates, it is clear that the interviewers, they have indicated what they have picked up, but on some of the candidates, the report is MAM. So how do we move forward? How do we know the report that looks, I don't want to say it is incomplete because I was not sitting in those interviews, but it looked rather inconsistent because on some of these candidates, it is just MAM. So what are we exactly noting here? I'm just seeking clarity on that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chair. Greetings to everyone who is present. Chair, mine also, I'm just going to note the report. Thank you.
Honorable is there? Honorable Urwas?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, so the report is noted. But just a note from my side, I think the content of it makes it a little bit difficult for us. We have seen the interviews and so forth, but it would be useful if that report was a little bit more comprehensive, just in terms of helping us to differentiate between the candidates. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Lokwase. Okay, Mr. Salma.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can just respond briefly to Honorable Ruiz, maybe Honorable Kanyile. The more extensive CVs of each of the candidates were also distributed to members, and they go into somewhat more detail on the experience and qualifications of each of the candidates. So those are also available for members' perusal. I can air them here, but they were emailed. They were emailed to members as well.
Chairperson, may I come in?
Yeah, you'll come in. Let me just assist the colleagues so that we are not structured on our when I indicated that I was observing the interviews, I was not observing in the panelist or something like that. I mean, I was saying I've at a distance. It's like when the interviews are carried by any institution, you can switch on this, even when you're not invited to watch the interviews. That's the point. No member of the committee was invited to the. It was a process that was carried by the Chief Justice and the team that was stating that, understanding that this report will come to the committee to deliberate. Now, the second point is that we have, that's why we said this report must be tabled in the committee so that members are able to note the report and go back and work on the, and sort details which already have been sent to our attention in terms of this process. When the invitation was issued, the invite for mere people to apply or so, and the candidate, that process were informed by members of the, I mean, the secretary of the committee, and of the public invitation. So when we're going to deliberate, in particular on the matter that the Honorable Khanyile is raising, we'll deal with that deliberation at the time we're going to deliberate, including the issues that we're raising, that there's another member who the surface issues which were raised at that point, so that we don't limit ourselves as members on the process. We must open up the process, and if there's any issue, so to come and table it in the in deliberation. And I think it will be appropriate for that session to be presented. At this point, we'll then have the with the content advisor to look for other information that I think will assist us to deliberate in the meeting, including the matter that you are raising, Honorable Khanyile. Honorable Khanyile?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think now I'm actually covered. I just want to try and sum up what I wanted to say. I'm not going to go into the details of these individuals, but I just want to give an example, because you've already said the content advisor is going to go and look for some of the information that might have been left out. If you look at Mr. Beke-Beke, we don't know Mr. Beke, but looking at this summary, we have an idea of what we're talking about. He came well prepared for the interview and blah, 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 and all of that. I think we would have expected consistency with all the other candidates, so that when we make a decision, when we make deliberations, we deliberate on something that we can see here, because we were not in the in the interview. And looking at the CVs and attending the interviews are two different matters. So we'll truly appreciate more details if they can be provided to us by the content advisor. And thank you so much for your intervention.
Let's not go out in this meeting with a view that there's inconsistency in terms of the Chief Justice report. What we can say is that we note there are some areas where the content advisor must come back to the committee and empower the committee in terms of the issues that could have been identified. The writings of the report, if it has been reported that has been written by the Chief Justice or the panelists, we perhaps may not have an authority to have contributed to its writings. What we can have is the report be presented to us as it's been presented, and deliberate on the issues at that point. We'll take decisions at that time when some of the issues have been raised, but we're noting some of the issues that we are raising. So that should be our approach, members and Mr. Salmon. Is that understanding, Mr. Salmon?
Yes, sir, we can do that. But also, if members are interested, I've provided a link in the chat, which is the YouTube recording of all the interviews. So if members want to actually go and listen to the full interviews, they're 7 hours long, but they're available there if you're interested.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, that I observed the interviews to my space where I was going through the link. So we must get on this matter. Let's utilize that. Those that do not interface with the proceedings of the interviews, go to that link, and then I will interface and take decision at that point. But let's welcome the report of the Chief Justice that was referred to the speaker to our attention. We'll then able to take decisions at a particular time. Thanks very much, Mr. Salmon and members, on this item. I think these were the two items that we're dealing with today. I want to take this opportunity to thank Deputy Commissioner Laugh for attending and all the commissioners, members of the committee, our staff, content advisor and the research team that have managed to present this report for noting in today's portfolio committee. Thanks very much. Our meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.